Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Our guest today on Route 51 is U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, who is seeking his fifth term representing Northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. Mr. Duffy faces Margaret Engebretson, a Polk County attorney and military veteran, in the November 6 election. I'm Glenn Moberg. Sean Duffy was first elected to Congress in 2010 after serving as the Ashland County District Attorney. He won his last election in 2016 with almost 62% of the vote. The district is rated solid Republican by the Cook Political Report. Today we're going to talk about the issues facing the voters in northern Wisconsin: the economy, taxes, health care, immigration, and the partisan political divide, including the possible impact of President Trump on this and other races. If you have a question for Congressman Duffy, we invite you to call in at 1-800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put your question on our webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I'll read it live on the air. We ask you to keep your comments brief and respectful, and we will try to get to as many of your questions and your comments as we can. Sean Duffy, thanks so much for taking an hour out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here and cruising down Route 51.
All right. How are things going with Rachel and the kids? Everybody in good shape?
Oh, they're doing really well. Today was the first day of school at Newman, so I dropped my little ones off and looking forward to a great year. Rachel has been doing some fill-in work on Fox, some of the Fox and Friends weekend show, so she's been enjoying that. So it's been good. Thanks for asking.
Well, we're into another election cycle. As I just mentioned, you won your last election with almost 62% of the vote. Cook is rating the district as a safe Republican seat, but the national polls indicate Democrats are ahead in the generic ballot. And it's supposedly the year of the woman, and you're facing a woman, Margaret Engebretson, who's also an attorney and a military vet. How do you feel about the election right now?
Well, in my five elections in Congress, four times I've faced women. Only one time I've faced men. And I would also note, you're right on the generic ballot, Glenn. Democrats are up. But the way you look at by the way, to your listeners, the generic ballot is when we just say, hey, would you rather have a Republican or a Democrat in Congress? We don't put names with a Republican,
right,
or with a Democrat. And what you see is, if Democrats are a Democrat plus 6 points, they're going to Republicans will retain control of the House. If Democrats are up by 7 points, they'll probably win the House. And I got to tell you, the generic ballot has been like the stock market. It's up and it's down. It's been moving far more aggressively than it ever has in the past. So Republicans have been down by 12 to 18 points, which is a big night for Democrats. But more recently, we've seen the number on Democrats only up by 4 or 5, which means Republicans can control the House still.
What issues?
By the way, it's going to change dramatically,
right,
in the next 2 months before the election.
Well, we just
don't know.
It reflects the volatility of our society right now.
That's right.
What issues do you think are going to be most important for voters in the 7th District?
I think the news of the day. So we're going to talk about the economy a lot. I mean, you've seen in Wisconsin a 2.8% unemployment rate, which is pretty impressive. There's four higher signs all across our state and the country and our district. People are getting raises. They keep more of their money because of tax reform. We'll talk about American energy independence. We'll talk about a stronger military, the ability to crush ISIS. I'm sure we're going to talk about health care and where do we go with American health care. We're going to talk about tariffs. The president's involved in a tariff dispute with three big entities, our NAFTA partners, Europe, and with China. And how does that play out? And how does it affect, mm-hmm, our farmers? Is it a good strategy or a bad strategy? I think those are kind of the top item issues that will come into play. And then it's like, what's the right balance with our environment? Environmentally speaking, how do we make sure we have cleaner energy sources, all the while making sure America is still competitive? Because if you go too far too fast, all of a sudden you outsource all these manufacturing and somewhat dirty jobs to countries that have really no rules, like China and India, and then we import those products, so they want to take our jobs. But we live on an earth where we don't live, with walls. The dirt and the soot and the pollution flows from one continent to the next. So making sure we're smart about how we do it and make sure we're competitive is, I think, also going to be part of the conversation.
Your opponent, Margaret Ingebrigtsen, has said that people in northern Wisconsin have been left behind by the economic recovery, that many people are working two jobs and just getting by, even though, as you mentioned, the state's unemployment rate is at 2.8%, an all-time low. What's your reaction?
Well, it's just – it's not true. It's, you know, believe, you know, you are my lion eyes here. People in even the smallest communities, there's jobs everywhere. There's full-time jobs available and also, you know, better-paying jobs. And what's happened – I mean, what happened before, Glenn, in the last, you know, if you just go 3 years ago, if someone lost their job, it created a lot of familial anxiety because they weren't sure if they'd get another one. And even if you didn't like your hours or your work or your boss or your benefits, you couldn't leave. And now, if you don't like any of those things, you can, in a day's search, find another job and probably get better benefits, a better boss, a better wage. Things are going really well across the district. And again, I've talked to employers. They're raising their wages. And what you're seeing is someone who might have been making $10 an hour, $11 at Walmart. Now they're moving up and they're making $14, $15, you know, $16 and some other and new jobs. And maybe some people who haven't been working before, whether it's the last 5 or 10 years, you see them now coming into the workforce and, you know, getting those basic skills that will help them climb the economic ladder. So this is an amazing story that is reverberating across the American economy. Just one last point, and you're going to ask me the question, but we had only 1.8% growth under the Obama years. And now you'll say, well, that he had the 08 crisis, and he did. Normally, you have explosive growth after a recession. A steep downturn would be matched with a steep recovery. Now, this was a financial crisis too, which is a little different animal. But we should have seen far better growth. On average, we only had 1.8%. growth. You've seen President Trump actually hit 3%, which some economists said we would never do again. And actually, the last quarter, we were at 4% growth. And so is it going to grow like this forever? The answer is no. We always peak and valley. But you look at free enterprise and streamlining rules and regulations, making sure they're smart. Not no rules, not no regulation, but streamlining them, making sure they're smart, and streamlining the tax code to make us more competitive, let our families keep more of their money. Amazing things happen. The economy grows and people have more opportunity and more jobs.
If you just joined us, our guest is U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, the incumbent Republican representing northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. He faces a race against Margaret Ingebrigtsen, a Democrat and a Polk County attorney, on November 6th. And if you'd like to – if you got a question or a comment for Mr. Duffy, our phone lines are wide open right now, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route51. Sean, midterm elections are often viewed as a referendum on the sitting president. That was certainly the case in 2010 when you were elected. It was a referendum on President Obama. Will the upcoming midterms be a referendum on President Donald Trump?
Well, Glenn, first of all, my headphones weren't working, so I'm all tangled up in your studios. I'm trying to get
You're doing a good job untangling yourself.
I did a switch out and put some new headphones on. The president has always, you know, considered it in midterm elections. So you've seen, you know, for decades, almost back to World War II, when the new president in power in the first off-term elections, his party usually loses seats in the House and the Senate. That's the standard. And that's why in 2010 when I won, that was Barack Obama's first off-election cycle, and Republicans picked up, I believe, 63 seats. Something unique is also happening, though. And if you look at it, when did that not take place? In Bill Clinton's second off-term election, which was 1998, two things happened. Actually, Democrats picked up seats in that cycle, and two things were going on. Number one, Republicans were trying to impeach Bill Clinton, and they thought that was a great strategy. And most of America said, you are way off base. We don't care about this. We care about other things, number one. And number two, the economy was exploding. Things were going well.
Do you think Democrats are going to try to impeach President Trump if they gain the House?
I do. I do think they'll try to impeach the president. My good friend Al Green from Texas, I serve on financial services with him. We don't agree on politics, but we have a good friendship. He's one who's out there promoting impeachment. I also good friend Maxine Waters, who is a ranking member of Financial Services. She's one who talks about impeaching the president. So I think Democrat leadership understands the politics aren't great for those folks in the middle. And so they're trying to say, no, we're not going to do it. If you listen to the base of the members of Congress, they are talking about it and they'll try to do it. But just again, 98, exploding, growing economy. I mean, right now you have the talk of impeachment and you have a great economy. So will Republicans lose seats? Absolutely. I think Republicans will lose seats.
The question is whether or not you'll lose control of the Congress.
And I think it'll be close, Glenn. I think it'll be close to a Republican majority and close to a Democrat majority. I can't tell you which way it goes.
I need you to react to the latest news regarding the president. His former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was found guilty on 8 felony counts, including tax fraud, hiding foreign bank accounts, and bank fraud. His longtime attorney, Michael Cohen, has pleaded guilty to 8 felony accounts, which include 2 in which he implicated the president for allegedly paying hush money to a porn star and a playmate in order to silence them and allegedly influence the 2016 election. Nick Ackerman, who's a former Watergate prosecutor, said Mr. Trump, I'm quoting him here, is now an unindicted co-conspirator. The president says he did nothing wrong. You're a former prosecutor. What's your reaction to all of this? And do you think these latest developments could influence people in November?
So let's start with Manafort first. I think he's kind of a sleazy guy. He's working for foreign governments, wasn't reporting it. As an American, I might argue that people should pay less taxes, but they should pay what they owe. You make money, you should pay your taxes. And those who try to avoid paying taxes, I find that to be, as you're violating the law, anti-American. So do I give any defense to Manafort? No. But you have to go, how did this come about? This was about a Russia collusion investigation. So the charges there and the convictions there have nothing to do with President Trump. It's all things that happened before Manafort spent, 90 or 100 days on the campaign with President Trump. And so we might go, Manafort, not a great guy, but has nothing to do with President Trump or Russia collusion. In regard to Cohen, we're going to have to see how the facts play out here. If Donald Trump, who, by the way, when the Billy Bush tapes came out, I said, listen, I've always supported President Trump for the policies, for the ideas, for the vision on the policy side for America. I've never supported a guy who would have his phone ring in the studio on you, Glenn. I'm sorry for that. I've never supported. I mean, this is his third marriage. The Billy Bush tapes and how he talked about women, that's not the way you and I talk about women or our wives. So I've never supported that. And, this relationship with a porn star, I mean, come on. That's not who we are. Now, is it criminal? I, from a lot of the analysis that I've heard, a former FEC chairman, Bradley Smith, said, no, not at all. Alan Dershowitz, a liberal Harvard professor, has said, listen, this isn't criminal because he paid the Cohen might have problems. But Trump, if he paid it out of his own pocket, you might say, well, is this for politics or is this to say I don't want my wife to find out that I was having an affair on her?
Well, that's the question. Why was it done right before the election?
Well, because I think these folks were going to leverage that and expose it right before the election. And so, there's a debate going on right now, Glenn, but it does come back to the point. This whole thing started because there was a thought that there was Russia collusion. And again, this has nothing to do with Russia collusion. Actually, Mr. Cohen, when he tested out, I wasn't in these hearings, so I want to be clear on that. But I've heard news reports of 3 members of Congress who were in the hearings with Mr. Cohen who said that there was he didn't have any information about Russia collusion, didn't see the president collude with Russia. And so if he changes that story now for the Mueller team, that's a problem. And just one other point on this, in regard to Russia collusion, Mr. Cohen was a personal lawyer for President Trump. The actual campaign lawyer who would have seen this stuff happen, his name is Don McGahn. We saw him in the news last week. You remember that? You probably reported on it. Don McGahn.
Well, he's been questioned.
Right now, Don McGahn worked was the campaign lawyer. He was a former FEC chair. Smart guy. I know his wife well. But Don McGahn, now as a White House counsel, was told by President Trump, go meet with Mueller. Met for 30 hours. Did it 3 times. And President Trump didn't do any screening interviews, didn't do any, what are you going to tell him? He said, go tell him the truth. And so the guy that would have this information, legally speaking, President Trump just said, go tell him what you know, because I didn't do anything wrong.
You know, you say Manafort is a sleazy guy, and you've got Michael Cohen making payments, hush money payments to porn stars. But what does it say about President Trump's judgment that he would hire these people in top positions as his personal attorney and as his campaign manager?
Well, I think if you look at the legal team of President Trump, he has a lot of lawyers that have worked for him. He has a huge operation that deal with real estate and then on the campaign, different and very honorable and reputable people. But a big organization, you can get some bad folks that work for you. In regard to Manafort, I share that. But I'm just let's be clear. As we step back into 2016 for a moment, there's not a lot of people who, one, thought President Trump, then candidate Trump, could win re-election or could win the primaries. And so all the Republican talent was going to like Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and even John Kasich.
Well, you supported Rubio at first.
I supported Walker, then I supported Rubio. That's right. And then Rubio got out before the Wisconsin primary, and I stayed out of the primary, but then through my support to President then candidate Trump. I'm talking, and now I lost my place. But the president's done a lot of people, and so he didn't have many people who would join his team and help him out. Manafort was one, but it was a short time. He got rid of him and actually brought in some real pros.
It took about 5 months, but
it was 90 or 200 days. Manafort was there.
Well, we've got a polarized electorate. The people who support Donald Trump love him. Most Democrats can't stand him. I'm going to play a couple of short tapes that I recorded at the Wisconsin Valley Fair. One of people who were at the Republican Party booth. One of people who were at the Democratic Party booth. Let's start with the Democrats. Ask them how they view the president.
I don't think I can say that on the air. And I don't think much of him. I think of him as being a Russian puppet.
This president that we have right now is a laughingstock. Terrible, horrible for our country. I couldn't imagine that we could ever have a president that is this shameful. But we got one.
I am very embarrassed by him. I don't think anyone representing our country should talk the way he does. You should be someone who is polite and has higher values than what he has.
Three people we found at the Democratic Party booth at the Wisconsin Valley Fair. That's Terry Ugaritz, Kevin Horacek, and Sharon Hanke. And Sean, let's just focus on what Sharon said. You know, her opposition is not necessarily based on policies. It's the way the president speaks. It's his language. It's the insults. She's a former school teacher, and she said she normally votes for Democrats, but she has supported Republicans. She likes Senator Jerry Petrusky, who she said was very respectful when he showed up at her classroom. But she can't stand the president's language, and she thinks Democrats should be in control of Congress to provide a check on him. How do you convince someone like Sharon Hanke that you're a Republican that she should support too?
Well, with regard to Sharon, listen, people have seen me now for almost 10 years and how I've conducted myself, how I engage with people who support, are indifferent, or are in opposition to me. And the bottom line, Glenn, is we don't talk like the president. We don't tweet like the president. We don't fight like President Trump. I mean, that's just not a Midwestern thing that we do. And so I think even you could play on the Trump supporter side, people will say, love the policies like I do, love where we're going with economic growth, but I don't like all of the tweets and all of the nasty language that he uses to people. Now, with that said, President Trump is a fighter, and he's fighting for principles that a lot of people don't like. Again, if you want to streamline regulation, people hate that. If we were trying to lower taxes, people hated that. If you didn't think Obamacare worked and you wanted a better strategy forward, there's some people who didn't like that, and you have to be a scrapper and a fighter if you're going to make a difference. And so some of the drawbacks with the language, I mean, he called Omarosa a dog. I mean, come on. That's not the way we talk about women or people, even with those who are in opposition to us.
And again, that's somebody he hired. Which calls into question his judgment.
Well, he was, if you listen to some of her early interviews, very favorable, and she was actually very good. Watch her first interview on The View. It's fascinating. But you got to pull it up on YouTube. But with that said, he's also fighting for – I mean, it's not easy. The Washington engagement and the status quo is hard to change, and he's fighting. And I also think – listen, you hear a lot about fake news, and I think my view on how he's fighting this – and to lump everybody into one bucket, maybe not fair. But when you don't tell the full story, when you tell half truths to drive a certain message, that's not right. And that's where people go, hey, come on. There's a lot of really good things that are happening, and there's some bad things too. Tell both of the stories, but if you just tell one.
Let me interrupt you.
And so
you.
I like the sometimes the fight on that. A lot of conservatives enjoy
because this,
and appreciate.
This is a good segue to our next tape. The people we interviewed at the Republican booth were harshly critical of the news media for not giving the president a fair break.
A lot of bad actions that people are doing that the media doesn't want to talk about. Physical threats against people, physical violence against people, property damage. I have signs out in my yard, and I wonder now and again if my yard isn't going to be targeted because of it.
I like Trump. He's a little rough, but I agree with a lot of his opinions, and not everything. For the most part, a lot of them.
I feel that some of the good things that our president is doing, that doesn't get talked about at all. I feel like everything that's positive doesn't get brought up.
So you've got a problem with media coverage of the president?
Oh, yeah, a little bit, yeah. I don't listen to it anymore. I don't listen to it anymore because they don't tell about the good that he's doing.
Those are the people we interviewed at the Republican booth at the fair in order. Rose Stuplik, James Merchant, and Debbie Zastrow. Rose said the anger and vitriol by anti-Trump Democrats is so bad she's afraid to put signs on her lawn.
Listen, I would just tell you, is there an element of both sides that get really hot and really feisty? Yeah. Do I think we resort in central Wisconsin to violence? I don't think either side does that. Now, I've seen the videos of other parts of the country where you have these two groups, left and right, clashing and fighting and clubs and beating. I mean, yeah, that is happening in the country, and that's sad. But I don't see that necessarily happening here. And I got to tell you what, for the most part, the engagement that I have with very far left Democrats has, for the most part, been pretty positive and respectful. And again, They'll make sure that I understand that they disagree with a lot of things, and they're vocal and smart about it. But for the most part, it's been respectful from my vantage point. Kind of one point on what's frustrated a lot of people, and I know that you might have a viewership that might lean a little bit left here, but and I know I'm going to probably get some calls right after this. But I do believe, as a prosecutor, I do believe in the rule of law. And if you have an investigation into a president on Russia collusion, I'm fine. Do the investigation. I think you shouldn't have Democrat donors in that investigation. There's good people who you could pick in as investigators and attorneys, and they shouldn't have given to either party. Just I think the perception of that is really bad on the Mueller team. But if you're going to look at it, I mean, one of the frustrating points on the right is, hey, well, and I'm not trying to talk about Hillary. I'm just talking about the fairness component of it. And you'll say, well, Hillary didn't win. And that's true. But when Hillary didn't retain the 30,000 emails when asked by Congress and destroyed them, that makes people angry. Or the private server and keeping top secret information on the server, that becomes a problem for them. Or even the fact that the dossier that Michael Steele crafted that started this investigation, the sources for the dossier came from a country no other than Russia. And that was funded through the DNC, the Democrat Party, and Hillary. And so when you see just a one track, you know, guns blazing for the president, and then you see others get off, We do want Lady Justice to be blind, and it should be applied equally to both sides of the aisle. And that's – I hear that frustration from a lot of my constituents, and I know that there's a lot of defenses that your callers could call and go, well, that – she didn't win and that didn't – but that is – we got to listen to both sides and what they're saying as we engage in this conversation.
Well, Debbie Zastrow, who we just heard, accused the news media of not being fair to the president. The president has singled out the news media for a lot of criticism. He's used words like fake news, enemy of the people, to describe those of us who cover his administration. Last week, there were more than 300 newspapers that ran editorials decrying the president's attacks. What do you think? Are some news media outlets so bad that they're the enemies of the people? Would you have used that word?
I would have used that word. I saw an interview with him this morning where he was clarifying that. He said, listen, the news media isn't the enemy of the people. But the fake news and the fake stories are an enemy of the people, not being truthful about what's actually happening. And he used to be a darling of the media. They all used to have him in, and he would call into their shows. Remember, in the 2016 election, he was on all the time. And people treated him pretty fairly, probably because they didn't think he was going to win. But does Fox, on not all their shows, but on – I mean, they have opinion shows, and they're opinionated on them. But there's a lot of the new shows that try to cut it down the middle. But if you look, I think just the velocity on the left, you have ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN. I think that becomes just the volume of those who might not be fully fair in some of the stories they tell. I mean, some have complained, you know, Molly Tibbetts. So the president talks about the border. Molly Tibbetts, who was murdered by an illegal immigrant in Iowa. Well, we've just found that out yesterday. The news stories weren't really covering that story at all yesterday because it might have fed into the president's desire to go, hey, we should secure our border.
We're going to talk about immigration in the next segment. So I want you to hold on that.
I knew you were going to go.
And why don't you eat at the punch. Today on Route 51, our guest is incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. He's seeking a fifth term representing northern Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51. We're going to take a short break. We're going to hear some of his opponent, Margaret Engebretson's position right after this. And we are back on Route 51 with our guest, 7th District Republican U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, who takes on Democrat Margaret Engebretson, a Polk County attorney and military veteran in the November election. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you got a question, you can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Wren from Minocqua called in to say that he wants to talk about issues that affect the district. We're going to get to some of that in this segment. We're going to see if we can crystallize some of the policy differences, Sean, between you and your opponent, Margaret Engebretson, in this segment. She was a guest on Route 51 a couple of weeks ago with her primary opponent, physician Brian Ewert. So we're going to play a few short clips from that show. But first, I want you to respond to her speech before the Democratic Party of Wisconsin convention. She came out swinging against you.
This is a man who put thousands of his own constituents' health care at risk by voting to repeal the Affordable Care Act without any replacement. A man who announces his town hall meetings just hours before they're to be held, and who seems most concerned with soliciting big donations from large financial interests and getting on TV as much as possible to spout hateful and divisive partisan talking points.
It's Democrat Margaret Engebretson. Sean, she says you shouldn't have voted to repeal the health care bill without a replacement. You need to give more notice for your town hall meetings, and you're mostly interested in raising a lot of money and appearing on TV. What's your reaction?
And she said espousing hateful things that didn't actually seem nice and kind, her commentary, if we're talking about niceness. Let's talk about first town halls. I announce my town halls usually 24 hours before I have them. Oftentimes, my schedule changes. If I don't show up, I'll hear a massive blowback.
There have been times that I've gotten notices for those town halls just 12 hours before they occur.
And you're always able to show up. I got to tell you, what I find interesting, Glenn, is when I do the town halls, I gather more Democrats than a Democrat county meeting on a monthly basis. All the Democrats share it, and they all show – many of them show up. And sometimes they say, well, you don't have them at the right – well, sometimes I have them in the morning. Sometimes I have them in the midday, and sometimes I have them at night. This is a big district. And so if I'm trying to put together a town hall run, I'm not going to just go up to Superior and do an evening town hall and then, go back home and then come to Ashland for a town hall. So I try to string a couple days of town halls together, and people get different town halls at different times of the day. But I do more town halls than most any – I think I'm virtually all the Democrats. And here's what concerns me too, Glenn. I do town halls, and people come and ask me questions and hard questions, and I should take those questions. But when Tammy Baldwin doesn't do town halls, when she's not saying, hey, you know what, I'm willing to come and take questions too. We're going to throw shots at Duffy, who actually does them. Republicans haven't had a chance to come in and see Tammy Baldwin. And I think if we're going to call balls and strikes, let's be fair and say, hey, yeah, Duffy, maybe I don't like – I would do it differently and I'd give a month notice. That's fine. But shouldn't Tammy Baldwin have town halls too? Shouldn't Tammy Baldwin take questions from her constituents? And she doesn't. And I hear crickets on the other side about the complaints on town halls in regard to Tammy Baldwin.
Let's go to the phones. We have Paul, who says he's an independent from Wausau. Paul, you've got a question on health care.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Mr. Duffy, thanks for serving. I grew up in a household where my dad ran for office as a Republican. My mom was active in the Democratic Party, so it was kind of a lot of tension in my house, and I appreciate your service. I know you take a lot of heat for that. I voted for you once, but I didn't vote for you last time. And the reason was that you went to Congress saying that you would not vote against Obamacare without coming up with a solution. I'm still waiting for that solution, and this is no trivial problem. As you well know, we have the worst health care in the world for an industrialized country. We have the most expensive health care, even though it's the worst for the one industrialized country where for the past 3 years, that lifespan's actually been decreasing. The cost of our health care is going to bankrupt our country if we don't find some way to pay for it and make it equitable. We need to come up with a solution.
All right, Paul, what
is that solution?
We got it. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thanks
and
for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Paul, I appreciate the one vote. Thank you for that, and I share your feeling. My mom is a big Bernie Sanders supporter. My dad is probably a little more moderate and was an Obama and Hillary Clinton supporter. We have fun family conversations at my house, probably like you had it at your house. So it's interesting stuff. Listen, I put out my own healthcare plan that was patient-centered, that tried to give more choice to families and patients in healthcare. I think having a government-run program, a socialized program that estimates say are going to cost $3 trillion a year or $30 trillion over 10 years is absolutely – I mean, that's as big as our whole federal budget right there on healthcare. I think we have to go in a direction. And by the way, so I have put out my own plan, and I've voted for other plans as replacements. And by the way, Obamacare is still there. And to your maybe point, Obamacare hasn't worked. We were told all these promises that the Affordable Care Act was going to work. It's going to lower prices, and you know there'll be sunshine and unicorns and rainbows. Well, that hasn't been the case. A lot of family health care costs have gone through the roof, where they can't afford to buy coverage anymore. If you fell into the gap where the government would subsidize your care, you were doing better under Obamacare. But if you didn't get the subsidy and you were paying out of pocket, you have families that couldn't figure out how to make that happen. It was destroying their ability to have coverage. So this is what I think we should do. We have those who believe the government should take it over and run it. And I don't know, Paul, you might be there yourself. I am not there. I do believe that if we finally make doctors and hospitals and clinics compete, if we have price transparency so we can know what the heck it costs to get different procedures, and that's different than when I have a heart attack. That's different than when I have a car crash. I just want to be saved. But there's a lot of healthcare that we plan out that we can shop for price and make these people compete against each other. And I want to allow insurance companies to develop plans that meet the risks that we face in our lives at a price that we can afford. But to say you got to offer gold-plated healthcare plans, and if you can't afford them, they're useless because they cost too much. And so I do think there's a better pathway, and that's what I've been fighting for in the House and I've voted for in the House.
Let's listen to what your opponent, Margaret Ingebretson, said about health care.
Look, the Affordable Care Act was a really great step in the right direction. But after studying this and talking to a lot of health care professionals, we must set the long-term goal of a single-payer Medicare for All public health insurance program so that never again does anyone have to worry about their health insurance, and it stays with you from the day you're born to the day you die. So we need to phase out the health insurance industry because we're talking about people's health. Taking away these administrative jobs, yes, will be hard on that industry, but we will need to absorb them into the Medicare system that will be expanded and to other industries.
That's Margaret Ingebretson, Sean Duffy's opponent in November. Mr. Duffy, your response.
So the question becomes, how do you pay for that? That would have been a good follow-up, Glenn. How do you pay for Medicare for All, government-run health care? And yes, again, this was an effort that was going to be put into place in California, and they basically ran the numbers and weren't able to do it. It's very, very costly. So I think that's – you can talk and put things in a bumper sticker, but you have to pay for it, number one. Number two, Medicare, as you are well aware, is having budgetary problems. And that's for just – I mean, let me tell you the three reasons why. One, baby boomers are retiring. So you have this whole group of used-to-be workers, now retirees. Because of modern medicine, we all live longer, which is a great thing in America. And healthcare prices have increased dramatically. So when Medicare is under financial pressure, what do you tell your seniors? If you're a senior and you say, we're trying to figure out how we pay and guarantee your healthcare plan, I know the plan will be let's give you what you have that we haven't necessarily figured out how it's going to be paid for. Let's give it to everybody. I think seniors to that would say, no, hold on a second. I worked for it. I paid into it, and I'm entitled to it now in my retirement. Why do you want to give this away to a whole other group of people who haven't fully vested in it? And how are you going to pay for it? I think that's appropriate questions that seniors should ask. And again, you can promise all you want on government-run healthcare. They made the same promises in Obamacare, and it's an absolute failure. I do think there's a better way, and I think a more free enterprise way would work. And by the way, Glenn, we can do that all the while by saying the poorest among us, those who fall in times of need, we got to help them out, and we will help them out. But I want people that – I mean, you can have a $3,000 difference in a colonoscopy from one community or one hospital to the next. That's insane, and you can't figure out what the price is until you get the bill. That's not right. And I want them to have to compete on price and service and quality and let us decide. I mean, I don't know anything about cars, but I do a good job of trying to go, who's the best mechanic at the best price? If I can figure out what mechanic to go to and I know nothing about cars, I can figure out what's the best doctor and hospital with the best care at the best price. Let me drive my health care. Don't take it away from me and my family. Let the government run it and make decisions that have a huge impact on my life. Don't do that to me.
Let's listen to Margaret Ingebretson on the recent tax reform bill, which passed on a party line vote and was signed into law by the president.
We need to repeal and replace that tax law. It funneled almost all the benefits upward. We already have a huge wealth and income inequality situation in this country. We need to sew up the loopholes and raise taxes on the ultra wealthy in this country. Look, we all benefit from a standing military, from airports and roads and bridges and the education system that educates our children who grow up to be employees. So we're all in this together. And people need to start thinking about this as paying their fair share. If we invest in ourselves and invest in our people, we can do much better and we can thrive.
Sean, are you worried about the deficits that new tax law is creating? With the economy facing $1 trillion deficits this year, are Social Security and Medicare in danger? They're supposed to be funded separately, but the trust fund has been raided before to take care of, shortfalls in spending.
So the raiding of the Social Security Trust Fund happened while I was riding my trike back in Hayward, Wisconsin. Your former representative was part of that raiding, not me. Let me ask you answer your question. I'll answer your question with a question. If you look at the revenue to the federal coffers since the new tax plan has been passed, have the revenues gone down or up? Do you know that? Take a wild guess.
Enlighten me.
I
suspect they've gone up because the economy is doing better.
Yes, because the – so, Glenn, here's the way we look at this. If we can grow the economic pie by taking a smaller slice of it, that smaller slice, because the pie is bigger, is going to be more money into the federal coffers. And that's exactly what we've done. When the economy explodes with its growth, which it is now, more money is coming into the federal coffers. So the revenue side, the income side is not the problem. It's the spending side that has caused deficits to explode. But there's not a revenue problem. We're bringing in more money than we ever have in the history of this country. We're setting records because people are making more money. The families here that got a new job and are making more are paying a little more in taxes. And when you expand that across, tens of millions of families, that's a lot of money that comes into the federal coffers. And that's why we're doing so well.
Are we going to have to restructure Social Security and Medicare in order to save it? Are we going to have to raise the retirement age? Are we going to have to change the way it's funded?
I think that, first of all, President Trump, who I tell you, I've tried to tell you what I agree with and what I disagree with the president. I agree with a lot of what he does policy-wise and the personal stuff. I don't always agree with him. But this is when he doesn't want to talk about how we restructure our entitlement programs. And we're going to have to do that. And I would just tell you this. When Democrats did Obamacare and Republicans did tax reform, they were one-party movements. We do have to look at Social Security and Medicare. And when we do it, we have to do it in a bipartisan way. When cameras are off and microphones are shut down, Democrats get the same problem that we get. And you can't have just a Republican vision to fix it. You just can't have a Democrat vision to fix it. Both sides have to sit down and go, hey, let's figure this out.
But that ain't happening in Washington right now.
But I'm going to tell you one dirty little secret. we actually work together far more than you hear about. Because just quickly, if I want to build a pass, and I got great ideas, Glenn, I know that they won't pass the Senate because they need 60 votes in the Senate. So I work with Democrats right up front, and I might have an idea, and I'll give it to them, and they'll tweak and modify, and we'll negotiate. And then the both of us will go out, and I'll work the Republicans, and they'll work the Democrats, and then we'll try to get a big vote in our committee, and then get it to the floor and get a big vote on the floor to try to put pressure on a dysfunctional Senate. We work together all the time. Now, on the big stuff, yeah, that's been a problem. But the small stuff, I told you, Maxine Waters, we disagree politically on a ton of stuff. But nice lady, work together when the cameras are off on a lot of different things. And that's the way the process is supposed to work.
Let's go to the phones. We have Gary, who identifies himself as a Republican from Merrill, with a question on pensions. Gary?
Yes, Mr. Duffy, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Been in existence for like 30-some-odd years, and all the pension plans have been paying into it. And now when there's a problem with some of the pension funds, it sounds like you and Mr. Ryan and the Republicans don't want to fund the PBGC to fulfill its obligation.
Sean Duffy, your response to that?
Well, there's been a couple of bills that have come through my office that we've been looking at. The first iteration of a bill that would help out the guarantee fund, I didn't like it. But there's a second bill that's come across my desk that I'm far warmer to. We're still looking at it. But yeah, this is a problem. We want to make sure that, you know, one, people who pay in are able to collect money in their retirement. This is oftentimes all that people have is the belief that they're going to have this pension for themselves. I also think we have to look and say, hey, we got to fully fund these pensions. You can't dump people into the taxpayer system and not have any responsibility for the pensions. And I would be all about going, how do we get, you know, some kind of pension reform and make it work. But I want to find a solution for those who have worked their lifetimes, believe in a pension, and now that's in danger.
We're going to take a very short break here. We've got a couple of underwriter announcements. We'll be right back. We are back on Wisconsin Public Radio's Route 51 with Sean Duffy, congressman who is facing a race for his fifth term against Margaret Ingebrigtsen. We are taking your phone calls, and we've got a couple on the line right now, and I think that's all we've got time for. But I want to hit one more of Margaret Ingebrigtsen's comments, this one on the topic of immigration.
That is a disgrace, what's happening at the direction of President Trump and being carried out by our Border Patrol and ICE. It's just heartbreaking to have our nation, which I love and I know everyone else loves so deeply, to watch this, what we're doing. It's unconscionable. We must provide a pathway to citizenship for those who abide the laws, they're paying taxes, they're in our communities. This is the realistic thing we must do.
That's Democrat Margaret Ingebrigtsen opposing President Trump's immigration policy, criticizing the separation of children from their parents at the border. Sean Duffy, your response.
So unconscionable and heartbreaking. Listen, we have laws, and we need to enforce our laws. And what I think is heartbreaking is if you have policies that will incentivize people to make a dangerous journey across the desert and potentially lose their lives and potentially be separated at the border, we want to have a legal immigration system. I'm all about immigrants. We all came from immigrants or some part of our family, and to make sure that folks can come into the country and instead get on an airplane and fly here for your job. Don't have to make the trip across the desert. And by the way, if you're coming across the desert, you're probably running drugs or human smuggling or guns. And so just multiple times I have voted on this issue, and I believe that we need to secure our border, number one. Number two, I have to deal with the DACA kids. We have to have at least a pathway to a legal status for those who haven't violated the law, that are here and working in the country. Let them come out of the shadows. Let them go back to Guatemala and come back. That's important. We need an internal verification system. And then we have to have – Glenn, we have to expand our work visas so we can allow people into the country so they can meet the demands of our economy that our own people aren't meeting. But also when the next downturn happens – they might flow back out, and those jobs are then left for our American workers. This is broken, and I have worked consistently with Republicans and Democrats.
What about the separation of children from their parents, putting the kids in custody? And there are 500 kids that aren't even reunited with their parents
yet. Here's the problem, Glenn. If you have policies that incentivize – again, we don't know if they're parents. Sometimes they've taken kids on their own or from their community to get them into the country. Sometimes kids are viewed as the golden ticket, like in Willy Wonka. They have a kid, they get to stay. And what that does is it incentivizes parents or bad actors in these communities to use kids to get the golden pass into America.
Not in favor of separating children from parents.
What I'm not in favor of, though, is an incentive that would encourage kids to be drugged on a very dangerous journey for the benefit of the adults. What I approve of, Glenn, is again securing the border. And I want to, if you want to come and work, let's let you get on an airplane and fly here, and fill the demands of our economy. That's what I've been fighting for. And frankly, it's been more challenging than you would think to get this done.
Let's go to John, who identifies as a Democrat in Minocqua. John's got a question on the Molly Tibbett case, which you brought up. A woman who was apparently murdered by an undocumented immigrant, and also the Russian investigation. John?
Hello. Hello, Congressman Duffy.
Hi, John.
I had the day off on the day all this news broke with the president's lawyer making an alleged statement that the president had violated the law by making illegal contributions into the payment of his mistresses. So I flipped back and forth for all of them. I heard about it from MSNBC and CNN. They did report that. I witnessed it. But when I turned to Fox, every program dealt like three quarters of the time on this Tibbetts thing and a little bit on the other. But it was their talking point that said the other channels were not saying this, as well as one of the other politicians who said that. So, I mean, that just wasn't the case. And then the other one was on the Mueller investigation. You know, that investigation is supposed to investigate the attack on our American system of democracy and voting, but also, and it says in the charge to the committee, and other crimes. So Mueller, et cetera, those fit under that. It's not something they were supposed to be doing. And what I just, while I was listening, I heard those things. The things I really wanted to mention to you was the budget or the tax cut.
John, you've given us two things already. We're going to have to cut you off. We're almost out of time here. Sean, your response to John, please.
Well, just in regard to Molly Tibbetts, I would watch Fox before I came over here, and the whole conversation was about not Molly Tibbetts, but about Cohen and Manafort. So, again, we'll all probably disagree on what networks are fair and not and what they cover. But in regard to Mueller, the wide array of things they can investigate. My point was, if you want to look at Russia, Hillary Clinton and the ties to Russia through Fusion GPS, through Michael Steele, in the Russian context to craft this dirty dossier, I don't know what comes of that, but I do think we should look at all of it. And my point was, you have gripes on both sides of the aisle. Maybe we should listen to each other and say, well, what do you want to have investigated? Oh, yeah, and what do you want to have investigated? Maybe we could look at all those things as opposed to a one-sided view to say, hey, the allegations made, the president must be guilty. From my view, there's been so many leaks, John, that if there was evidence of Russia collusion, I think we would have heard of it through the leaks by now. We haven't heard anything in regard to any collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians, and that's why I'm skeptical of the investigation.
I'm going to get a quick response to you on one other topic. Your opponent, Margaret Ingebretson, says she's in favor of the legalization of recreational marijuana. When I talked to you before, you said you're absolutely opposed to that. Marijuana is a federal crime. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he opposes its use, but his Justice Department hasn't cracked down on Colorado or Washington or the other states that have legalized it. And he could. And on top of that, Canada is going to legalize marijuana next year. Do you feel that you're in the path of a runaway train here? Maybe you're fighting a losing battle?
I may be, but I'm as a father of eight kids, and I see the use of marijuana as a gateway drug. I see what it does to motivation. We're looking for jobs. We want people to go work, Glenn. The federal government says if you smoke marijuana, you can't work. We don't say that. It's the insurance companies who assess risk, who say if you have people people who are smoking marijuana on the job, you can't employ them. You got to fire them. And so something's there about marijuana risk in jobs at a time when we want people to get off public assistance and get back to work. That's a really good thing to have happen. I'm concerned about the opioid crisis and the gateway and pathway that marijuana is to harder drug use. And yeah.
Very good.
The train might be running, Glenn, but I just, as a father, I'm not coming out and telling my kids that smoking marijuana is okay. I'm not doing that.
Well, unfortunately, the train is running here as well. We're completely out of time. Sean Duffy, thank you so much for sharing your time with us this
past hour.
That's
great.
We want to thank today's guest, U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy. His official website is duffy.house.gov. You can find out more about his campaign at duffyforwisconsin.com. He faces Democrat Margaret Ingebretson in November. You can find out more about her at vetfordemocracy.com. I'm Glenn Mobrick for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Route 51, the topic is climate change and how it's affecting our weather and our ecosystems in north-central Wisconsin. My guests are Michael Notaro of the UW-Madison Nelson Institute for Climate Research and Catherine Clancy, a professor of fisheries and water resources at UW-Stevens Point. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.